welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, November 30th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll learn about a collaboration between UAS and Perseverance Theater called A Pain in the Crevasse. We'll talk about the UAS creative publication Tidal Echoes with guest Crystal Randolph. Marjorie Menzie from the Friends of the Alaska State Museum will be here with a preview of the upcoming Oregon Fest. And Melissa Griffiths and Rosie Einza will be here with the local details about World AIDS Day. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 41 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A piece of First Nation history recently burned down, and officials say it was deliberate. The abandoned police station at a Mohawk community was the site of a standoff in 2004 between police and First Nations people. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The building that used to house the Kanasataki police was destroyed by fire. The cause of the blaze was unknown, but fire investigators already have their suspicions. And so, too, do some of the inhabitants of Kanasataki.
This is violence. This is a reflection of what is in the hearts of our youth who are out at night.
They're frustrated youth. I know that there's no opportunities in the community. The band councils are very limited in what they can do because, let's face it, Ottawa holds the purse strings.
Native leaders also believe that vandals started the fire. The police station was the site of a standoff in 2004. That's when a former Grand Chief, James Gabriel's house was burned to the ground after he tried to crack down on organized crime in Kanasataki. Police officers from other Native communities were called in to help, but protesters ended up barricading them in the police station. That standoff lasted for more than a day before Quebec's public security minister reached a deal with protesters. Since then, policing has been transferred to Quebec's provincial police, and the station has been abandoned since. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
World AIDS Day is being held this week to raise awareness about the disease. Tribes in the U.S. are among those hosting events, including a Wisconsin community. Miranda Vanderleest with WXPR has more on the Tribes Conference, which includes a focus on young people.
The Chippewa Sakagan community is hosting a youth AIDS conference in light of AIDS Awareness Day. Coordinator Rachel Voter says the conference is an initiative to educate and bring AIDS awareness to youth in the tribal community.
I asked the youth the other day, are you even aware what is AIDS, what is HIV? And surprisingly, a lot of the youth didn't know. And we're talking about middle school age and high school age kids who doesn't even know what HIV or AIDS is.
Voter says although AIDS isn't an immediate concern in the community, it's important for future generations to practice safe and healthy living. Melissa White is a registered nurse from the Menominee tribe who will be presenting at the conference to talk about the reality of the disease.
She has a board of moccasins, and she has about 12 or 13 pairs of moccasins on this board. Each pair of moccasins represent a person who has passed away from AIDS in the Menominee community.
Voter says kids will be presenting posters at the conference about what they learned about AIDS. For National Native News in northern Wisconsin, I'm Miranda Vanderleest reporting.
A large area of the U.S. is dealing with severe weather. Some tribal lands will spend nearly 2 days with winter weather advisories. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has details.
The original winter weather advisory covered an area from southwest Oklahoma to the border between Minnesota and Canada. Dozens of schools have closed for the day, including at least one college on Lower Brule tribal land. Aberdeen, South Dakota meteorologist Mike Connolly says the snow event is a long way from over.
We'll see moderate to occasionally heavy snow. That'll persist through the overnight, but it may actually shift to the west. And then some redevelopment for Tuesday morning and persisting through Tuesday afternoon in the east.
Yankton Sioux tribal lands are projected to see up to a foot of new snow by Tuesday night, with as much as 10 inches falling on the Lake Traverse Reservation in South and North Dakota. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The Navajo Nation is declaring the third week of December and second week of June as Navajo Nation Suicide Prevention Week to help address recent suicides. It's seeking to coordinate resources from tribal and non-tribal sources for prevention efforts and is looking to develop social media campaigns. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Indigenous governance programs at the University of Arizona, educating practitioners and policymakers to implement nation building at home and create stronger Native nations. Course offerings at igp.arizona.edu. Support by the Blackfeet Nation, who thank the U.S. government for joining them to seek permanent protection of Montana's Badger 2 Medicine Area. Information about the work to protect their sacred lands from oil and gas development at badger-2medicine.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 30th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio by Shona Strausser. She's the an artistic associate and the director of education over at Perseverance Theater. Welcome to the show, Shona.
Thanks, Scott, for having me.
Nice to have you. And Brian Crowder, he's a student at UAS, also maybe the president of the drama club, I think.
Yes, that I am.
All right, well, welcome to the show,
Thank
Brian.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Nice to have you here. And you two are collaborating, UAS and Perseverance, on a pain in the crevasse.
Let me tell you, the jokes are really endless. Although, it's no laughing matter, because we're talking about climate change. And here in Juneau, that's something that we all feel, certainly right now, every single day. We're feeling it in the Eagle Crest. We're seeing it at our very own, glacier. So it's a pretty big deal for us here.
Indeed. And you guys, you picked sort of the quintessential place to perform these plays at the pavilion at the glacier, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. So we were like, okay, so this is a worldwide coordinated event, you know. So we're like, okay, what place in Juneau would really be impactful? And it was kind of a no-brainer.
Glacier sounded good.
And maybe at first, like, oh, we could helicopter up onto the ice itself, right?
And then you're like, well, what does that defeat the purpose? Yeah. Could bust everybody there.
So give us the details first, and then we'll dig in a little bit. It's this Thursday, right?
Yes, this Thursday, and it's going to be out at the glacier. To start the night, it'll be about 40 minutes outside, and that's where the audience will be hearing these six short plays read. And they all range around between 3 to 5 minutes in length or so. So we won't be out in the cold too long. We'll get you guys back inside the Glacier Visitor Center for some hot cocoa and a panel discussion with some experts on climate change from the University of Alaska Southeast, and we'll be having Glenn Wright and Aaron Hood, Jason Amundsen, Kathy Connor, John Neary, just a great group of people who are experts in these fields and who are able to kind of put into words what's going on in their eyes is how they see climate change affecting, especially specifically here in Juneau, how it's affecting our geography.
Interesting. And is this an international or national movement, right? It's the CCTA. Tell us more about that, Shona.
Yeah, so this is part of the Climate Change Theater Action Network. And essentially, it's a group of theater artists. And, you know, there's also been people who do film and dancers and songwriters and everything. So, but they call it the Climate Change Theater Action Network. And this is worldwide. So this isn't just a United States thing. This is a worldwide event. A couple of people got together and said, okay, so how can we make some impact as a collective whole about what's going on here? So they asked 60 playwrights to write short plays about climate change and where they see it. And these are plays from all over the world. There's plays from Africa and France, and there's actually quite a few from Africa from the United States. And there are playwrights that are really very famous, too. I mean, we have Arthur Copit writing a play, Neil LaBute. These are famous playwrights, definitely no slouches here. And And it's an amazing, you know, they sent us a Dropbox, right? And so I love Dropbox. And I'm going through it and we're reading all these plays and some of them are hilarious. And, you know, you have a hard time. You're like, should we laugh at this? I don't know. but it helps put things in perspective, you know, when we can laugh at something and say, okay, I get that. So some of them are really introspective and some of them are really personal and some of them are really funny. So they're all being done. A 60-60, so an organization can choose which ones they want to do, right? So we chose the six that we wanted to produce, and they're all being done in November and December across the world. So I'm getting emails every day from other organizations that are doing this, and of course I can't even read the emails because they're in different languages, which I love. But I'm like, I know what that is. It says climate. I get that. So it's been really great, and this is all part of COP21, which is the global climate conference that's happening right now in Paris. So it's all part of that and coming around that event.
Okay. Brian, can you give us an example, the title of one of these shorts?
And, sure, absolutely. My favorite title of these six is, the title is An Average Guy Thinking Thoughts on Global Warming. And it's just the title alone, it gives you kind of a sense of, you know, what you're in it for, an average guy thinking thoughts on climate, on global warming. And that's what you get. You get an average guy who doesn't know a lot, and he's being honest, and he's showing himself to the audience for what he is, and it's hilarious. And at the same time, it's very poignant, and you take something away after you read it. Yeah.
Now, I know you're directing out there. Will you also be acting?
I'll be reading stage directions for the pieces. I'm directing one of the pieces, but then the other five are being directed by other directors and other artists at PT. So,
wow! Yeah. So this is a lot of folks are going to be out there. Paint the picture for us, Shona. How many folks are going to be out there actually?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty impressive. I mean, Frank Katas is on board to read a piece. Our very own city council member Maria Gladyszewski is reading a piece. It's a pretty big deal for us. Erica Lee will be out there. Donnie Scott, just some major heavy hitters in our community that really want to get some more information out there without being too heavy-handed. And I think that's something that's really important, is that this is art still. So we're not going out there and we're not going to lecture you. We're not going to, you know, it's actually art. So you're going to be able to listen to somebody's perspective that is really nobody's in our town, because these are all plays that have been written all over the world, but that that you can really take it in and then have your own thoughts about it. And I think art is really great to talk about issues like this.
Absolutely. And then you can come in for the lectures, like you were saying, to get some of that hard science behind it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to actually get the info, because we, you know, what's happening here is that we just all really, we see it happen before our very eyes. We can feel it, I think, more than most places. And so we do have some of the world's best experts in glaciers, you know, like in our community. And how cool is that?
Absolutely. Brian, give us the details once more.
This Thursday, December 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Mendenhall Glacier, make sure you bring a coat or something warm. There will be hot cocoa, so don't drink any before you come. Make sure you drink a lot there. December 3rd, 7 o'clock, and see you all at the Glacier.
And tickets, how much does it cost?
It's a free event. All right. That's why we love it so. We really hope people show up. We know we're asking them to be outside in the dark and cold. So we're trying to make it as easy for them as possible.
All right. Thanks so much for coming in. Brian Crowder and Shona Osterhout, appreciate you being on the show. We'll see you Thursday night at 7.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Know the last thing they told me was, Billy, the ice is too thin. But I wouldn't listen, and just like a fool I fell in. And I can see the lights of my village burn bright in my mind. But I've disobeyed nature, and now it's come my time. Late in October, I decided to go for a trip. Alone I did walk, except my dog at my heels, she didn't nip. And I was out hunting rabbits when I crossed this frozen old slough. But the ice was too thin, and Lord, I did fall through. The water was shallow, I climbed out soaked to the bone. Laughing and shaking, I quickly started for home. But 2 miles is a long way when you're wet and it's 20 below. And I'd better start walking, 'cause I've got a long ways to go. You know, the last thing they told me was, Billy, the ice is too thin. But I wouldn't listen, and just like a fool I fell in. And I can see the lights of my village burn bright in my mind. But I've disobeyed nature, and now it's come my time. Blue jeans are frozen, dear Jesus, please save my soul. A fool on thin ice, God in heaven, now I'm so cold. And that faithful old dog, she stayed till the very end. And when sleep overtook me, I heard her howl in the wind. You know, the last thing they told me was, Billy, the ice is too thin.
As a family member or close friend, you are the most likely to recognize when someone you love is in crisis. Act swiftly and effectively when you see warning signs of depression or substance abuse by getting confidential professional help. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, depression, or just life, Search offers a place for help. Contact the helpline at 877-294-0074.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 30th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 18 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by UES Tidal Echoes fall intern Crystal Randolph. Thank you for coming on the show, Crystal.
Thanks for having me back, Scott.
Okay, so the deadline, ladies and gentlemen, for Tidal Echoes is tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the last chance to submit. By 11:59 p.m., you have to have your poetry, prose, and artwork submitted to our submittable account. Otherwise, it's wait till next fall.
But, yeah. All right. So let our artists who are listening right now, if there's anyone who doesn't know what Tidal Echoes is, let us know.
Yeah. Tidal Echoes is Southeast Alaska's literary and arts journal. It's put together by a team of students and faculty here in Juneau over at the University of Alaska Southeast. It's been going on for years now, and it's a journal that we put out every year that features the artwork and the writing of Southeast Alaskans. So people from all over the Southeast community will submit. So we have submissions from Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Metlakatla, all over. And basically, the main thing that we want people to know about is that the submission process is now online, because in the past, we've done it over email. But we've moved to a new format called Submittable, which a lot of journals and magazines have been doing. It's very exciting, and we're stoked to be online and be moving forward with this technology.
Okay. So you're wide open, right?
Yeah.
Poetry. fiction, creative nonfiction. Take it from there.
Yeah, no, definitely. Basically, anything people are passionate about, we want to see that kind of work come through. If you're passionate about writing plays, we want to see that. And if you're passionate about carving, do that. Like, basically, we want this journal to reflect what Southeast Alaskans, artists and writers really, truly love doing. And so that's what this journal is all about, is showcasing that and celebrating that.
Okay, and when will it be published?
It's going to come out on April 15th, 2016, and that's when we're going to launch, and it's going to be a really big party, and we're going to have cookies, and people are going to read their works, and we're going to have our featured writer, Elyria Jensen, and our featured artist, Terry Rothkar, there to celebrate with us and to talk about their work.
Okay, and I see you have the journal open right now. Do you have an example of work you can share with us?
Yeah, I have last year's journal here with me, and I'd like to share the work of a student that's here at UAS. His name is Joe Lewis, and this is his piece called Whiskey in Autumn. Snow dusts the peaks of Mount McGinnis, clinging to the branches like bald eagles. Born on the first snowfall in November, so her mama called her Autumn. Her heated fingertips rake down my chilled back. They bite. Cedar smoke and ash swirl in my nose the way scotch massages my tongue. Whiskey in Autumn keep my body warm beside the light of a faint beach fire. Her hair and my face lit up by the cinders, casting shadows on tent walls and spruce tips. Our bodies exposed to smoke and moonlight, making love while the sun sleeps.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
What do you think the editors saw in that piece? What is it that you like about it even?
Wow, I think it's just such a musical piece, and I think that's probably what really appealed to the editors. I can't speak for them, of course. I wasn't on the editorial board, but I just think it's such a musical piece, and it has such great images in it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so you spoke about this new online way to submit. Imagine an artist is listening right now, and they haven't even begun. How long can they expect to spend on the submission process?
So the submission process this year is really quick. Submittable makes it very easy. It takes probably the maximum of 5 minutes, and probably the longest it takes is just trying to figure out which pieces you want to submit. So if you're sitting at your computer, basically what you want to do is you want to navigate to our submittable form, which is located at http://universityofalaskasoutheast.submittable.com/submit. And so at that point, you're going to be taken to our submission form, and you'll see three categories to choose from, which are poetry, prose, and artwork. And so, for example, if you are an artist listening in right now, you would click on the artwork category, and that will take you to a page where it's going to ask you to create a user account if you've never been on Submittable before. And so this is just so that you can keep track of your submissions. It's not going to cost you anything to sign up for an account. It's not going to send you constant emails. It's just so that you can manage things that you turn into Title Echoes or other literary journals or art journals if you do continue to submit stuff. And so after you've created an account, it's going to take you back to our form, and then all you have to do is enter in information like your last name, your first name. You're going to put in a little writer's or artist's bio. And so after doing that, it's going to ask you to attach the piece, and so you click on the different files you want to upload. And for the artwork category, you can select a maximum of 5 files, and the only requirement for these files is that they be at least 1,800 pixels wide, and they have to be a JPEG or TIFF format file. And so once you've attached those, you only have to click the I agree box on the terms of agreement, and then it's as easy as hitting submit.
So no big essays about why you want to apply or
no.
Huge bios, nothing like that.
No.
Sounds very easy.
Yeah.
And you gave that the big web address, but I think I found it just by Googling Title Echoes UAS.
Yeah.
Took me right there, right?
Definitely, then, yeah.
Okay.
Googling it works as well, yeah. If you go to our main page at uas.alaska.edu, we have the link there as well. It's this big green button that says submit now, and so, yeah.
Very exciting. So at 11:59, I'm sure Submittable closes it down. It's not like a human choice anybody can make, right? So
yeah.
It's a hard deadline.
It's a hard deadline, exactly. You got to get in there before 11:59 p.m. Otherwise, you have to wait until next December.
Okay. This sounds very interesting. Again, UAS Title Echoes, the submission deadline is tomorrow at 11:59 p.m. Can't wait to see it in April. Any last words for artists who are listening right now, Crystal?
I would just really encourage you to take advantage of the opportunity, because Southeast Alaska's Regional Journal is just a great opportunity to have your work featured in a publication and to see it come to life on a page and to share it with others who really are excited about writing and artwork in this community. So, yeah, I would say why not submit?
And I just thought of one more question, of course, and it's for the carvers and the sculptors out there. You'd love to see their work. And, again, it's just a picture of their work, right?
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Anything else, Crystal? I think we just about have it.
I think that's about it, yeah.
Great. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks again.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 30th of November, 2015. It's the birthday of the man who said, "A successful book is not made of what is in it, but of what is left out of it." Mark Twain, born Samuel Clemens, Florida, Missouri, 1835. His first book was a collection of short stories called The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, came out in 1867. Did not sell many copies, but it made his reputation. And 2 years later, Mark Twain published The Innocents Abroad, his humorous book about traveling to Europe with other American tourists, which was a big bestseller. In fact, it was the best-selling of all Mark Twain's books during his own lifetime. Over the next 25 years, he published Tom Sawyer, Life on the Mississippi, and in 1884, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, founded his own publishing company, published the memoirs of Ulysses S. Grant, which was hugely successful. And then, as most people know, he invested a huge amount of money in the automatic typesetting machine called the Page Compositor, which turned out to be an abysmal failure. He was in financial trouble. His book, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, did not sell very well. He took his family to Europe, wrote Pudd'nhead Wilson, 1894. It did not sell well either, and so he went on a worldwide lecture tour to earn money. In 1896, his daughter Susie died at the age of 24 from spinal meningitis. And after that, Mark Twain sank into depression. His wife, Olivia, died in 1904. And a year later, on this day in 1905, Mark Twain turned 70, and he had a big party at Delmonico's restaurant in New York City. Willa Cather came, Andrew Carnegie. There was a 40-piece orchestra, and Mark Twain got up and gave a speech. He said his 70th birthday was far superior to his first. He said, "I remember the first very well. Everything was so crude, unaesthetic, primeval. I hadn't any hair. I hadn't any teeth. I hadn't any clothes." The secret of long life, he said, was to smoke only when awake and to avoid exercise at all costs. Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry, "One of Us." Must another poor body brought to its rest at last be made the occasion of yet another sermon? Have we nothing to say of the dead that is not a dull, mortal lesson to the living, our praise of heaven blunted by this craven blaming of the earth? We must go with the body to the dark grave, and there at the edge turn back together. It is all that we can do, remembering her as she is now in our minds forever, how she gathered the chicks into her apron before the storm and tossed the turkey hen over the fence so that the little ones followed, peeping out of the tall grass, safe from the lurking snake, how she was one of us, here with us, who is now gone. One of Us, a poem by Wendell Berry, from his new collected poems, published by Counterpoint Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Staples, with technology products, copy and print, shipping, and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples, make more happen. happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 30th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Chief Curator of the Alaska State Museum, Addison Field. Welcome to the show, Addison.
Good afternoon.
And also, friends of the Alaska State Museum Library Archives, I'm not sure I got that right, Marjorie Menzies. She's president of the board. Welcome to the show, Marjorie.
Thank you. Yes, you got it right.
I did?
Yes.
Kind of,
sorry.
You're too kind. Well, welcome to the show, you two. And we're going to be talking about the first annual Oregon Fest this Friday from 4 to 6 at the SOB. This sounds like so much fun.
Yes. We think it will be a wonderful time, a wonderful way to start off Gallery Walk with us in the atrium of the State Office Building. We're going to have a holiday organ fest from 4 to 6 with refreshments and wonderful music on the Kimball organ, which people who have lived in Juneau for any length of time are probably familiar with, but this is going to be a special event featuring our organ.
Yeah, absolutely. What inspired this, Marjorie?
Well, we realized that the organ needed some maintenance, and we know that state funds are limited these days, so the Friends are there to support the activities of the museum, the library, and the archives. So we thought this would be a good time to call attention to the organ and its maintenance needs.
Okay. Now, Addison, you were saying it's very unique to have an instrument as part of a museum's collection, especially one that's getting used.
Right. Now, there are instruments all around the world in museum collections, but by and large, when something goes into a museum collection, it is it's treated as a work of art, as an object that represents a certain time or a certain place in history. Very often, those objects don't get used. Some types of museums they do use their objects. Think of a railroad museum. You know, they do still use their locomotives and their cars and things, but for the Alaska State Museum to have an instrument that is still being used, still being played, is sort of an exception to what we normally do. This is called, in the museum world, this is called consumptive use. We expect that we want to still use this, and the object still needs to have a life, but we expect that certain things are going to break over time. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the situation that we're in now, and that this organ, which was built in 1928, needs to be tuned, right? It needs to get sort of have maintenance done on it every couple of years, and then looking back on it, we need to have a more comprehensive overview of the organ. It was built in 1928 as a theater organ, so there's not just pipes, there's also a xylophone and whistles and a percussion section and even a piano. And it was designed originally to go with the silent films of the age. And we need to bring in an expert to look at it and to tell us what needs to be fixed and how we can get it back to true working order.
All right. Marjorie, can you tell us a little bit about the organ's history here in Juneau?
Yes. Well, as Addison said, it was built in 1928. It was purchased by the museum about 40 years ago. There was a big celebration in 1977 when it was acquired by the museum. And there was a community effort to raise $30,000 to buy the organ from private owners to give it to the museum, which was wonderful. So it's always been part of our community effort to keep that organ here in Juneau, because it's the very last pipe organ in the state and a very special instrument. We're happy to be able to present a holiday organ fest, is what we're calling it, because the organ features special things like bells and chimes and sleigh bells, and it's going to be wonderful to hear those as part of this, part of the music that's going to be presented. And I will say that our presenters are going to be two very well-known people here in Juneau. First, J. Allen McKinnon, who has been playing that organ for us for about 40 years. And he's born and bred in Juneau. He was a member of the Save the Organ Committee, which raised funds back in 1977 to save the Kimball organ for the public. And people know him mostly because of his connection with Northern Light Church. He has been the choir director. Also, we'll have T.J. Duffy, who is a new organ player for us, who's been in Juneau for 7 years. And he is someone I haven't met yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. He's a very interesting young man who has been playing the organ about twice a month. And in his other life, he's a legal secretary at the Department of Law with the Office of the Attorney General. And he says that one of his hobbies is playing poker. So this is a poker-playing organist, pipe organ player. So if you want to hear these two wonderful men who volunteer their time to play our pipe organ, you want to come to the Organ Fest during Gallery Walk between 4 and 6 on Friday. And we'd love to see everybody there.
From what I know of TJ's playing, too, he'll play the classics, but he's not afraid to play some more popular tunes as well.
He sent kind of a list of his playlist, and I didn't bring it with me, but it sounds like it's wonderful. I also want to mention that we're going to have hot cider, so when it's cold and rainy or snowy out on Friday, there'll be hot cider and some refreshments that Reach is going to be putting together for us. So it'll be a really fun time.
You know, I just remembered I actually have a sample sound of the organ up there. Would you like to listen to it really quick with me?
Absolutely.
Sounds great. All right, this is from 1978, and I believe Franklin Butte.
Butte.
Yeah, let's play it. Here we go. A lot of noise coming out of that organ.
And people will remember Franklin Butte because he was very instrumental in helping to rescue the organ. They found it. The pipes were all corroded, rotten from being in a wet area. And he was an engineer, and he was the one who was very helpful in putting it together.
Absolutely. And you just hear the rich sound there. And one of the things that has never been hooked up, even from that day, is the piano. The piano has never been hooked back into the whole system. It was designed to be played at one station, and the player would accompany a movie, a silent film, and could do everything, do all the sound effects for that film from the one playing station, and it's never been completely put back together. And that's one of the things that the State Museum would like to do. We'd like to bring in a professional from somewhere down south to take a look and tell us what we need to do in order to bring it back to that full sound that you hear there.
Okay. Come see all of this. Start your first Friday activities this Friday from 4 to 6 in the atrium at the State Office Building. Did you say the cider will be there?
Hot cider.
Oh, sounds good. So it's been great talking to you, Marjorie Menzie and Addison Field. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, we just want everybody to come. We're really eager to enjoy the organ together.
Absolutely.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Massive volcanic eruptions brought forth the Hawaiian Islands from deep beneath the sea. How did these remote islands of lava rock grow lushly green with plant life? Birds played a vital role. Birds like the Pacific golden plover we're hearing now. Three-quarters of Hawaii's native flowering plants probably came from seeds that hitched rides with birds. Plant seeds travel with birds in several ways. Sticky or barbed seeds adhere to the feathers, much like the seeds stuck in your socks after a walk in a weedy field. Other seeds travel in mud caked on a bird's feet, and still others cross the ocean in the stomachs of birds. The bird-borne seeds that sprouted in Hawaii evolved into more than 1,000 new species. The most likely seed carriers were strong flyers like plovers or tropic birds, which travel thousands of miles across the Pacific. Or perhaps the seeds hitched a ride on the ancestors of this Akeapola owl we're hearing, caught in a storm and blown to the Hawaiian Islands. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice-rink or call 586-0410.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 30th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Melissa Griffiths. Among other things, she is on the board of 4A's, which we'll learn about in a minute. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Hi, Scott. Thanks.
And Rosie Ainza, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott.
You wear a few different hats, too, I think. But you'll be one of the featured speakers at the World AIDS Day. I guess we don't want to call it a celebration, a gathering.
An event. Yeah. I mean, it serves a lot of purposes. In a way, it's about remembrance, but it's also a pretty hopeful thing.
Okay. And let's get the details first, and then we'll talk more about it. But it's tomorrow, right?
It's tomorrow. So December 1st is World AIDS Day, and as the name implies, it's worldwide. Here in Juneau, we'll be celebrating it from 6 to 7 p.m., and I guess I said celebrate. I think it's going to be a really joyful event for a lot of reasons. But it'll be 6 to 7 p.m. at Holy Trinity Church in the Sanctuary, and that's on 4th and Gold.
And that's the main meeting space at that church, right? Okay, and so there's 6 to 7 tomorrow. You're on the board of 4A's, which is a major organizer of this, right? Tell us about the 4A's.
So the 4A stands for Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, and it's an organization that provides support and services for people with HIV and AIDS in Alaska. It also does a lot of prevention and education and outreach, and, you know, various people might not realize that the 4A's has touched their lives, but if you've ever gotten free testing for HIV in a bar, that was the 4A's. If you've ever taken a free condom to be safe, that was also the 4A's. So it's a pretty good organization. It's been around for 30 years this year.
Okay. How did you meet Rosie, and how are you going to be involved tomorrow night?
Gosh, well, Melissa and I met through my fiancé, Logan Lott, I think, originally. They've been friends for a very, very long time. And Melissa ended up marrying one of my best friends, Todd Mace, in a kind of an impromptu ceremony last year. And
such a Juno story all around.
Yeah. And I volunteered for CIGLA, and through that, Melissa
has... CIGLA? Let us know that.
CIGLA, excuse me. Yeah, Southeast Alaska Gay and Lesbian Alliance. So through that, I've become involved with 4-A's as well. And so Melissa and I have had an opportunity to work on several different projects together, events, mostly events. And she has asked me to come speak at tomorrow night's gathering because of some work that I've done in Kenya at an orphanage there called Agape Hope Children's Center. I was there last year working as a volunteer, and I'll be heading back in a week.
Okay. And there at the orphanage, what is the state of AIDS and or HIV?
That's a great question. About a quarter of the children that live at Agape, there's about a little over 100 kids there, and about a quarter have been affected by the HIV/AIDS virus. Either their parents have died as a result, or the children are HIV positive. So there's a lot of stories, a lot of individual stories about the kids that have been affected by HIV and AIDS. A lot of them are quite tragic, very sad stuff. But the whole purpose of the organization is for hope, and they live in a really good environment now where they hadn't before. So I hope to kind of bring a different perspective to the event tomorrow in what I talk about.
Okay. Yeah. Melissa, can you give us HIV and AIDS 101?
So, yeah, a little bit. So HIV is a virus that can be contracted through sexual contact and that's, you know, penetrative sex, not oral or kissing or things like that. And it can also be contracted through use of intravenous drugs. Sharing needles is a common way that people can contract the disease. So the HIV virus these days is not a death sentence as it once was. We saw a lot of deaths and a lot of tragedy in the 80s and into the 90s, but today there are medications. You can suppress the virus to the point that people can have a pretty normal life, but it does involve a medical regime. You have to take pills to take care of it. AIDS is basically when the immune system is so depressed by the HIV virus that people can be really at risk for other diseases. So when you talk about death and AIDS, it's not typically, you don't die of AIDS per se, but, you know, people can be susceptible to things like tuberculosis. They might be more likely to get other diseases that can cause their death. But again, today, HIV, if it is found quickly, if it's treated, people can live very normal lives. And so one way that that happens is the 4-A's does outreach, and so we have an office here in Juneau that serves Southeast Alaska, and that includes outlying communities. And then there's also, it's a statewide organization based in Anchorage. So there are people providing education, testing, and services to make sure that people can live healthy lives.
Where is your office located here in Juneau?
It's located in the Emporium Mall is the name of it. So above where the Nickelodeon is and where Heritage used to be.
And James Hoagland works there, right?
Yes. James Hoagland is our Southeast coordinator, and he does a fantastic job with case management, outreach, testing, a lot of things. He's a one-man show and doing a great job.
And will be a speaker tomorrow night as well, right?
Yes. James will talk about 30 years of 4-A's and the work that the organization has done throughout those years.
Okay. If somebody wants more information on 4-A's or to talk to James, how can they do that?
So the best way to get more information and to get contact information is to go to alaskanaids.org.
Okay. So tomorrow night from 6 to 7, what can folks expect? What's it going to look like?
So we'll start out, we'll have some music by the PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus. Those ladies will have some great songs. Sometimes they're pretty soulful, and sometimes they really pick you up with the beats. And then we will have Rosie and James doing presentations. So that will be the kind of bulk of the event. Typically, we have a little bit of a candlelight vigil, and that's the part where we remember people who have been lost. And we'll also have some coffee donated by Heritage and some light treats, so if people come after work and need a little refreshment.
And who would benefit from coming to this, or who do you expect to see there?
So people who tend to come, I think, are people who feel compassion for people who have been affected by HIV or AIDS, or who feel hopeful that it can be prevented. Anybody who's been touched in their lives by people who have experienced, people who have died or contracted HIV or AIDS. Yeah, that's probably who we usually see.
How about you, Rosie? Who would you like to see there tomorrow?
Oh, gosh. That's a great question. I think, honestly, anybody from the community. HIV and AIDS, you know, those monikers, they have kind of, you know, some stigma attached to them still from when the viruses first were discovered back 30 years ago. And I think that, you know, with the growing heroin epidemic as it's been coming out in Juneau, I think that it's just another way to show support and for, you know, for a whole, all different kinds of people, I think. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's a free event. We're going to be talking about some interesting stuff, and it's always fun to hear the Juno Pride Chorus. And free coffee and treats is also awesome.
Absolutely. So tomorrow night at the Holy Trinity Sanctuary from 6 to 7, World AIDS Day gathering / celebration / remembrance / hope and learning.
Yeah, all of these things and maybe more.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Melissa Griffiths and Rosie Ainza.
Yes,
anything else
you.
Either of you would like to add?
No, thank you.
No,
for
thanks
having
for
us.
Having us.
All right, see you tomorrow.
My clothes don't fit me no more. I want thousand miles just to slip his ski. The night is falling, I'm blind awake. I can feel myself fading away. So receive me, brother, with you. Faithless kiss, or will we leave each other alone like this?
Support comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/pool. More information at 586-5325.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get an update on library activities with Beth Weigel. We'll learn about the Juno Nordic Ski Club. We'll highlight the upcoming runs for AWARE. We'll get the details about the Juno Community Charter School's homemade soap. And we'll get a preview of Gallery Walk at the Juno Artists Gallery. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on KTOO News. Repeated at 4 on KRNN and online via KTOO.org. Let's take a look at the weather. It's currently 41 degrees at the Juneau Airport. And tonight, rain heavy at times, lows around 39. Tuesday, rain showers, rain at times heavy in the morning, highs around 42. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain showers, highs around 42. Thursday, rain likely, highs around 40. Friday, rain likely, highs around 39. And it looks like rain likely into the weekend with highs around 39. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same frequency.